You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 28 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we've got Derek Jensen from Rensburg, some Kumba results and some Naspers process collapsing. We're talking disconnect between employees and employers on future work from home models, and then Convergence Partners digital access for the African continent. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management, authorized financial service provider. Some morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Capco reports a 15.4% improvement in net rental income, and the CEO says the worst of the pandemic may be behind us. Capco, I mean, once a high flyer, really had ever since Brexit, had a tough time. So what's that, 5 years of toughness for Capco. Business day, Naspers hit on China-fueled selling frenzy. 190 billion wiped off the market cap. Yesterday down 7%, second day. Tencent, as I do this, down 3.7%, so potentially some more pressure coming this morning. Morning markets, US was red, S&P off 0.5%, Nasdaq down 1.1%. Asia red, Sydney down 0.8%, Tokyo off 1.2%. Commodities mostly green overnight. We've got gold at $1,811 an ounce, Rand unchanged over the day, 1478, and top 40 looking for about a 70-point red opening. That's what, 0.1%.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Derek Jensen from Rensburg, portfolio manager at Anchor Capital. Derek, appreciate the early morning time. We had Anglo Platinum on Tuesday. Kumba came out yesterday, a little shy with the dividend. They only paid 99% of headline earnings per share. And some of their costs were up, but I suspect that's because simply they're mining what would normally be less profitable iron ore, but with that price above $200 a ton, they are printing cash. And then Anglo results on Friday, we should see chunky dividend from them as their kid companies pay out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this has just really been the theme that people have been keeping an eye on for the last sort of 3 to 4 months. It's just kind of the numbers that these resource counters are going to report. I must say it's been the perfect environment for a company like Kumba to really capture the bit, sort of higher iron ore price and then translate that through into earnings. So, you know, you're talking numbers where you're looking at yields in excess of 10% or even around 10%. And I think, you know, in the backdrop of our local market, it's very difficult to go and scratch around for a bit of yield at this stage of the game. So, yes, you know, we're obviously exposed to a bit of volatility in the underlying commodity prices, but this is certainly some of the best results that I've seen in my career in terms of what these resource counters are doing, the PGM basket plays, and as you mentioned, this Kumba. So even just sitting and being patient in these companies, one needs to be mindful that they're highly cash generative at this point of the cycle. Obviously, you need to keep pace with production and capture these higher underlying commodity prices. I don't think it's over for them. I think that, you know, people are talking about peak of the cycle stuff. I still think that there's certainly some fundamental backdrop for the next sort of 18 months for these resource counters. Bit of a reopening trade. Obviously, we've seen a bit of a spat take place in China. But I do think that, you know, you're going to be paid to own these things, you know, you accept a bit of volatility, but very comfortable to sit in these counters, collect the yield, and then obviously, just as I've always stated, you know, keep close to the door in terms of what these commodity prices essentially do over the short to medium term.
Yeah, I mean, but as you pointed out, 10% yield, this is at interim stage. And if commodity prices stay where they are, I take your point, we've got easily another year, perhaps a year and a half of you know, we could get 40% dividends over between now and the end of next year. You mentioned some selling, the Naspers and process. I mean, this is the Tencent story, which sort of has been bubbling under and has really come to a fore at this point. But I got to say, I mean, looking at Naspers, looking at process, they're back to where they were in March last year, not the lows of March, sort of the post-recovery. It felt painful, but the stocks had had a massive run.
Yeah, so we obviously kind of coming back to the base that we started at, just looking back a few months. But, this is the space that we play in. You know, anything China-related, one needs to understand the risks associated with any sort of Chinese-regulated or domiciled company. So, you've got a very strong authoritative stance, just from a government perspective, within the confines of China. And, these are big monopoly type companies that have really just, grown to the size that they're at the moment. And just talking to that Tencent asset within the Naspers process stable, that sort of anti-competitive monopoly type behavior, authorities just want to make sure that their thumb is essentially on the pulse at the end of the day. They keep control and they kind of, make space for new entrants into the market so that their economy can kind of have a bit of a longer term runway when you start looking at a bit of a diversified approach in terms of where they want to get their economy to over the next 5 to 10 years. All that said, I do think that, we've been through times like this in the past. I certainly haven't seen such a violent sell-off in such a short space of time when we talk to the sort of Naspers process movements that we've seen through the course of the last week. But if you kind of detach from the noise, I think that, kind of 12 to 18 months from where we sit today, we're going to look back and think this was, probably a great buying opportunity. I think, you've got to accept the volatility that a high PE stock like this will attract. But I love the assets. I love the quality of the business. I think that, the growth profile, particularly from a Tencent perspective, is still intact. You're getting a lot of the periphery assets within the Naspers process stable, probably and essentially for free at this stage of the game. And, I think that one needs to use this sort of negative sentiment environment as an opportunity to slowly and gradually top up over the next couple of days.
Yeah, I take your point on that. And if you remember back to 2018, when they were banned from selling games and the whole world was collapsing, and that's just moved past. Derek Jensen from Rensburg, Portfolio Manager at Anchor Capital, appreciate your early morning time. Celebrate with MoneyWeb this August for our 23rd birthday. You could win a two-night stay for two at any Soho Sun Hotel in South Africa and a lucky draw for our Insider Gold subscribers only. All you have to do is sign up before 17 August to become a subscriber. Just 63 Rand a month. MoneyWeb Gold, MoneyWeb's Insider Gold subscription offers you exclusive high-end financial tools and data to help you make better investment decisions. Go to moneyweb.co.za, click on competition for more details.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Emda Faree, Head Employee Benefits Consulting, Momentum Corporate Advice and Administration. Emda, appreciate the early morning time. The work from home sort of debate, it's been very much framed around, when do bosses call back staff, framed around, what is the future of office space, etc. But actually, this really needs to be a conversation between the boss and the staff around how this works and how it's going to look going forward.
Absolutely. Good morning, Simon. Good morning, listeners. So recent research by Momentum Corporate shows how employees have generally found their leaders to be caring and empathetic as they lead the organizations through the challenges of COVID-19. However, the area where there appears to be a potential disconnect between leaders and employees is the matter of this work model of the future. And our research shows that around 50% of the organizations we surveyed are planning for their employees to return to their work sites. Mm-hmm. 5% plan for their employees to continue working from home, while 44% plan to adopt a hybrid model. And this aligns to a global Gartner study, which found that after the pandemic, companies are planning for nearly half of their employees to work remotely, at least some of the time. However, employees have enjoyed the flexibility of working from home, and they have a far greater appetite for a model of, you know, work from home. So research by AgriForte shows that 50% of employees would like to continue working from home after the pandemic. 41 are keen on a hybrid work model, and only 4% would like to return to the worksite. And this is partly exacerbated by the impact of commuting to traditional worksites. And a report by International Workplace Group indicates that employees want to live in closer proximity to their place of work, mm-hmm. so that their maximum commute is no more than 15 minutes. So while the nature and strategy of a business will naturally influence work models, leaders need to be aware of the employees' preferences. And we must have engaging conversations where we consider what employees' needs are and what employers' requirements are, and then we need to see, you know, where do we find that happy medium of what that workplace in the future should be.
I mean, that's, I think, the key point you make there. It needs to be those conversations. And you know, in the note that was sent out, it's that sort of Goldilocks solution where both parties are happy. And I get that some bosses want you back to some other degree, but we need to find that middle ground between the two parties.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it really is about, you know, finding what your requirements are and what your staff are and what you then really need, and, you know, see what can you then put together so that your staff, you know, can be happy and that they can perceive your employee value proposition to still work for them.
And there's still, I mean, although, I mean, this almost becomes, I suspect, a benefit. We've got the benefits in place, such as pensions and healthcare, etc. The work from home debate, it's sort of, it's going to be above traditional benefits. But I think a lot of companies could use this as a competitive advantage, perhaps, in terms of, hey, we have a model of work from home, hybrid, whatever it might be.
Absolutely. So I think that brings a new risk to employers and to employees. Because, you know, a hybrid and a work-from-home model opens up the talent pool, which mm-hmm. then ultimately means that, you know, it creates jobs, and particularly, you know, jobs that are knowledge-based, where the geographical location of the employee is no longer an obstacle. So employers can recruit from any large pool of talent, you know, nationally, internationally, mm-hmm. Wherever they find the right skills. And that, of course, then also opens up opportunities for skilled and qualified employees, who are no longer limited to working in a big city and to commute daily to, you know, the office, to the worksite, to wherever they need to get to. So it's a risk that employers need to manage, because the more and more that we get these new way of work models to get entrenched, we could start to see a big exodus of valued and skilled employees, you know, that are no longer tied to the company geographically, and they just might see the opposition to offer a far more attractive opportunity and a far more appealing employee value proposition and employee benefits mix.
Yeah.
It's very important.
No, sorry, I cut you there. It is going to be very important, and they need to get that blend, but I think it is going to be, there's just so much benefit to the company, and they need to have those conversations. Mdo Furie, Head Employee Benefits Consulting, Momentum Corporate Advice and Administration, appreciate your early morning time this morning. Chatting work from home there. Do you want to get back to work? Do you want to get back to the office? We're asking that question on our social media platforms, LinkedIn and Twitter. Options are, yeah, you want to get back all the time. Perhaps you're missing the office, a mix would be best. I think a mix is probably the best, but it's going to be situation specific. And as Imda was saying there, we need to have those conversations. Have your vote, have your say on our Twitter and LinkedIn profiles.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money. also available on podcast.
Turning now to Yolandi Tabo, Investor Relations Principal at Convergence Partners. Yolandi, appreciate the early morning time. A large funding round from your Convergence Partners focusing on digital access into the African content. I mean, in many ways, sort of in the early 2000s, Africa was skipping fixed line. We went straight to mobile internet, and that was seen as a great boom for the continent. But the reality is, research suggesting that only about 7% of the population is on fixed line broadband, and that's a tiny fraction, and frankly, leaving the continent behind and creating massive opportunity for investors.
Yes, that's right. Good morning, Simon.
And I mean, the World Bank estimating it's going to be about 100 billion to get Africa up to acceptable levels of digital access in the next decade or so. Where's Convergence Partners? What's your role going to be in getting that access and that for the rest of the continent?
So the 7% that you mentioned earlier relates to the last mile access connectivity. And I'd backhaul, long haul, undersea and terrestrial fiber connectivity. So traditionally, fixed broadband has been neglected because of the leapfrog that we all know of, where we move from copper straight to mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Currently on the continent, the last mile is still predominantly mobile, especially given the constraints around lower population densities, access to reliable power, etc. There are limitations in terms of what mobile offers as a last mile solution to end users, not to mention the high cost to the consumer. Some applications need lower latency, stable and reliable connections, which can only be delivered with fixed broadband connections. Yeah. Further, even though next generation mobile networks such as 5G offer solutions to some of these application needs, because of the high throughput and lower latency of these networks, they require fiber to the towers to be able to deal with the volume of traffic and the new ways of utilizing mobile connectivity. And this recently launched Digital Infrastructure Fund is going to be focused on realizing this opportunity, which then in turn drives digital inclusion on the continent through quality, affordable broadband.
You mentioned the fund there. You just raised $120 million US dollars, so a chunk in ZAR, of course. I mean, are you targeting? Are we talking Africa as a continent? Of course, that's 52 odd countries. I mean, are you targeting specific geographies for the fund?
So the fund will invest across sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm-hmm.
That means companies whose primary activities are conducted in sub-Saharan Africa, or global companies that are raising money to enter or invest in the region. We also do direct investments that are often into the larger economy, but we also use platforms or buy build strategies to intentionally create regional assets. This then enables us to get many smaller and more challenging markets in a way that still yields attractive returns and very strong transformational developmental impact.
The one thing the pandemic has done over the last, 16 months we've been in lockdown locally and globally and to the continent is we've used probably more data than ever before. I imagine as well that actually the pandemic has had a negative impact in slowing progress in terms of rolling out digital access and digital services.
Well, throughout the continent, digital services were classified as essential services.
Mm-hmm.
So service providers in the space were still able to operate, although in some cases on a more scaled down or limited basis. The use of existing networks increased on the back of accelerated demand for digital services, including increases in adoption of tools such as the cloud, video conferencing, and other sharing tools, as we change the way we work, learn, and live. But there were some constraints on new deployments, particularly during the hard lockdowns across the various regions. On the whole, though, we've especially seen strong growth across our portfolio companies that are providers of additional bandwidth and related services, and this is forecast to continue even after the pandemic effects recede.
We'll leave that there. That's Yolandi Tabo, Investor Relations Principal, Convergence Partners. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles, we're talking around Tiger Brands with Nessa Nair from Sasfin. They're recalling some 20 million cans of veggies. I have one of those cans. The question we asked was, you know, how bad a hit is this to the Tiger Brands' reputation, particularly after that Listerosis tragedy of a few years ago? Just over half of you said they'll be fine. A third of you, very concerned, said this is bad. The rest of you said this is different. And it is a bit different in that it was from a third-party supplier of the cans, but of course it raises the question around Tiger's internal processes. You'll find our polls, our questions, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have your vote and have your say. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Remember, we're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, and Nicole. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.